Moreover, whenever he retired or left the company for any reason, Katzenberg would be entitled to a lump sum payment of the estimated future value of his 2% profit interest. Wells seemed proud of this plan, arguing to Katzenberg that the bonus would provide an annuity for his infant twin sons, while confiding to Eisner that he doubted the 2% bonus would ever amount to anything. Disney's film studio was largely living on the animated classics of the past. The Christmas release for that year was the 1940 film Pinocchio, only a modest success even in its original incarnation. Disney re-released an animated classic every 7 years, an interval calculated to reach a new generation of children and parents. Then it was returned to the vault. Even more than Eisner and Wells, Katzenberg's arrival at the Burbank campus lent a new sense of urgency to the revitalization of Disney. The partnership Katzenberg had envisioned with Eisner while still at Paramount was reconstituted, albeit with Katzenberg as a junior partner. Though they had rarely socialized outside the office, they began having dinner together every Monday night at Locanda Venita, an Italian restaurant in Beverly Hills, when they were both in town. Katzenberg moved into an office in the animation building next to Eisner's. One afternoon, Katzenberg walked into the boardroom, where plans for the renovations of his new office had been laid out. Katzenberg glanced at the plans and, without acknowledging the presence of the architect, whom he'd never met, said, "Let's have a look at the office." They headed down the hall, and as they walked, the Disney executive in charge of the project said, "Jeffrey, maybe I can take this moment to introduce you to..." Before he could finish, Katzenberg thrust his arm up, his hand in the air. Without turning or altering his stride, he said, "We just met." Then he dropped his hand. Despite the sometimes frenzied schedules and long hours, in the early months and years of the new regime, management was surprisingly informal. Many of the best ideas surfaced at Eisner's Monday staff lunches, when the heads of the various divisions sat down together when they were in town. At some of the early meetings, division heads came prepared with the latest numbers and projections, prepared to be grilled by Eisner. So they were taken aback when he opened one meeting by stating, "Today we're going to talk about whether Mickey and Minnie should get married." A scenario was developed in which the iconic mice would get engaged on Valentine's Day, shop for rings at Tiffany in April, get married in June, and honeymoon in Paris. But the idea struck many as heresy, and Eisner dismissed it. Still, the episode showed Eisner's willingness, even eagerness, to challenge conventional wisdom. "Give me the idea you didn't want to embarrass yourself with," Eisner often suggested. "Give me the idea that you think is going too far," or, "What would you do if there was no budget?" Stanley Gold's instinct that Eisner's and Wells's skills and personalities would complement each other proved correct. Eisner and Wells settled into a comfortable working relationship, with Wells shouldering most of the administrative burden of running the company and attending to financial affairs, while Eisner oversaw the creative aspects, from film and television production to the expansion of the theme parks. Eisner and Wells wandered in and out of each other's offices at will, and Eisner felt he could trust Wells with any confidence. Wells was discreet, and from the beginning, he never aspired to usurp Eisner or overshadow him. He was a natural manager and mediator, and when other executives had problems with Eisner,